Welcome back to Too Much Future, our show about playing all the Fallout games. This is episode... What episode is this, Michael?
That's a great question. I don't know.
It's episode 16, of course, as we all know.
Oh, okay. Episode 16.
Yeah. I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael.
Taking a big old sip of coffee right in the middle of that for some reason, and it's a real scattered day. And so last time we went to New Reno.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big old hootin' and a holler of a time.
Did we?
Well, yeah, sure. It took some time out of our lives. Tungsten, of course, spent the greater part of his life upstairs at the Bishop Casino. And then we went to NCR.
I was going to say, what year is it in your game now?
Oh, God, I don't know. It probably has advanced a full year, though.
Okay.
I did get, during this episode, I got the message that's like, please, Tungsten, the village is dying. We're all dying. I was like, oh, geez. But it all worked out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, tell me about going to the NCR.
I will say, like, straight up at the top, I did not enjoy any of the stuff I played for this episode, basically. Like, the NCR is not interesting or fun, and any of the stuff that, it made me do afterward is also not interesting or fun. And it's notable because I think the differences in how NCR is put together as an area is visible right off the bat. So if you've listened to previous episodes, you by now know that there is always like an exposition NPC who is standing mm-hmm. around outside to tell you like what this place is and what it's about. There actually really isn't one for NCR. You just mm-hmm. show up and there's like a fence. And like, I mean, normal, like Fallout, like post-apocalyptic trash stuff, right? Like there's like a fence with a bunch of people in cages, which like does not look good. We know what people in cages mean in this world. It means slavery. So, my character Twelinor, like, you know, saw that immediately. But then there's just like a shopkeeper and a guy who will watch your car if you've restored the car to working order by this point in the game. But no one really says, like, welcome to the NCR, here is what the NCR is, or, like, tells you where to go or what to be doing. You just kind of talk to people, and they'll mention, like, important folks in town. But you come into this place, and, it reverts back to kind of that Gygaxian model of, like, all you can do is walk around and ask people, like, hey, do you know where a Gek is?
Yeah, there are two kind of... I think it's really interesting that the game really funnels you into this right after New Reno, because I think we're seeing like two kind of monoliths for the way these kinds of games can go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So New Reno is I think the you know, as you said in that episode, right? It's the model from which all the rest of stuff like this gets built, right? And I think a lot of RPGs after it. In that it's kind of hub and spokey a little bit, right? There's like some NPCs you can talk to that really kind of get things going. And there's kind of a quest chain that you're doing that's kind of across the thing. And the way that you approach it is variable, but most players are probably going to be doing the majority of the things you can do in New Reno just due to the way they intersect with one another.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you know, aggro the entire city. But what, so that's like one thing. And I think that's like the RPG quest design that we have now, right? Like anyone that you talk to in a Mass Effect game or in, Pillars of Eternity or whatever, right? Anyone you talk to in the city is probably going to give you some ideas about who you need to go to get the next quest from. That's not the case in New Reno, as you're pointing out, right? There's no NPC there to be like, here are the five people that matter and you should go talk to them.
You mean NCR?
Oh, NCR. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said New Reno.
There. Oh, yes, of course. All the same. No. Yes. So, yeah, there's no introductory NPC. And the other thing about that is that in the vast majority of places in this game, and indeed in the vast majority of RPGs that come after, if you go and talk to a quest giver without getting prior information about them, about what they're interested in, you'll probably be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that if I go and talk to the leader of Vault City, right? And I go and talk to her and I say, hey, what's going on? Through that conversation, I will probably figure out the quest I need to do in Vault City. Same in New Reno, same as a lot of places in this game. In NCR, if you go talk to people without an idea of what you need to talk to with them about, you just won't get the quest.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't exist because you don't know to ask about it. And so, yeah, I think you're 100% right. It does have this much more kind of Gygaxian simulationist feeling to it, because you need you have to follow a pretty clear daisy chain of information, even if that daisy chain of information is just, hey, the sheriff might know of somewhere to go work.
Yes.
And then talking to the sheriff to find out you can go work at the Godwin farm. Godwin. Is it Godwin?
Weston.
What?
I have no idea where you got Godwin.
I don't know. Well, I mean, of course, because I'm always thinking about Mary Shelley's father, William Godwin, and his moral fable, Caleb Williams. but I don't know either. But right, in order to go and do some of the quests here, you have to like talk to some nobody who then tells you about some middle party who then tells you about the thing that you can go and do to even start the quest. That's very different from basically anything else in this game, and it's very different from the way that RPGs went in a general sense. And mm-hmm. So I think even in these kind of big pillory ways like you're talking about, big conceptual ways of thinking about the relationship between the player and the game world, or ways of thinking about the player character itself and the world around them, very, very different approaches there.
Yeah, was that sort of like, I mean, did you kind of share my reaction upon arriving, which was like, I don't really know what I'm doing now.
Well, so I went and immediately clicked on the billboard that's there.
Okay.
There's like a billboard in front of mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's not on the first screen or anything. But actually, so I bought some guns. Here's an interesting little fact for you. So first time I loaded into NCR, I accidentally ran into the laser gate and died.
Oh yes, the laser gate.
There's a laser gate, and you can just walk into it, and I did, and I died. And so I reloaded my game, and when I reloaded my game, the weapon dealer had way different weapons, like way different weapons.
Huh.
So now I've got a Ripper, which is like the energy cell charged chainsaw sword, like Warhammer 40k style. So I'm like hitting people with that thing all the time, and that's cool. Finally, I have a melee weapon better than the one that I got from the second screen in the game.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a big accomplishment on my part. So I went and clicked on the billboard, and the billboard gave me like a set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
And those rules gave me an idea of like, oh, I need to go talk to the police, because it seems like there's a lot of like, you know, that kind of thing going on around here. Also talked to the bartender. So I like immediately went into like D&D mode, right?
Right.
Which is like, what things here would give me the ability? But yeah, I mean, it completely lost on the first screen. And I got there at night, which meant the gate was closed, and there's no explanation that the gate opens in the morning. So I was like, what do I need to do to get into NCR? Like, what am I supposed to be doing here? So there was a lot of like wandering around and doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So yeah. I talked to the bartender too, and this is the closest we get to the exposition NPC, which is just talking to these people, and you learn a couple of things that like President Tandy is looking for someone who might to do some work for her.
President who?
President Tandy? Tandy from the first game? Do you remember her?
What? Well, I remember that in Tonk's universe, Tandy is neither alive nor dead, kidnapped nor rescued, existing in a kind of variable state, much like the Bleed. So I don't know what the hell kind of universe this is in, so President Tandy of the NCR is the daughter of Aradesh, who you rescued, or the Vault Dweller rescued from Fallout 1.
Mm-hmm. So we learn about her. We also learn that there's a ranch with, a guy named Weston owns it. And there's, if you ask about either the GEC or about Vault 13, the two things that you know that you're looking for, you'll get pointed to a guy on the Weston Ranch named Salt Beef Bob. I never met this guy. Did you?
Yeah, I ended up meeting Salt Beef Bob.
Oh, that's cool. Like, that's a nice bit of divergence, because I never figured out how to get onto the Weston Ranch.
I think that our pathways in this episode are very divergent then.
Yeah. Well, that's neat. Just a hazard a guess here, right? Did you kill all the slavers?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I did too. Vic died. R.I.P.
Oh, R.I.P. Vic.
Yeah.
You weren't very good at anything.
No. But that was sort of my first order of business was like, well, okay, I know that there are things going on in the city. I'll look to those later. Right now, I need to figure out what is up with these slavers who are, and this is weird. So NCR prides itself on not having slavery, but they have this kind of like slavery camp set up outside that is run by a slaver. And what this guy does is he watches over the slaves who are kept in cages out there for people who own slaves who visit NCR. So apparently, like, they don't want to bring their slaves in, but they just, like, keep them all in a kennel outside. It's one of those moments where, like, I am not sure to what extent I am supposed to read this as, like, an indictment of the NCR politically and kind of its ideals or the compromises it's willing to make, what have you. Twelinor makes no compromises. I killed all the slavers and then freed all the slaves.
Yeah, I did the same thing. You can talk to someone named Elise, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Is that her name?
I think so.
She's part of the NCR Rangers. And she's like, hey, if you want to be part of the Rangers, get in here and go free all those slaves. And I went and did that too. And I guess, so I actually looked it up afterward because that's the only thing she told me to do. And so I went and looked it up afterward, and apparently she gives you a second quest, which is to go kill Metzger. But I've already done that, and you've already done that, so.
Well, lucky us.
Yeah. And then that's it. That's our quest change.
Yep, that's
You've
it.
You've eradicated slavery in the wasteland.
Uh-huh. I mean, this is the other thing that's weird about the NCR and kind of everything that is orbiting around it, is that all of the quest chains are very, very short compared to what we've been dealing with up until now. And it's almost as if, the other thing to keep in mind is that NCR is moving the main plot forward in a way that other locations don't.
Mm-hmm.
But despite the fact that it's moving the main quest forward, like, there doesn't seem to be a lot to it. Like, it feels like the main quest it got less attention than all of the little side towns. It's a very strange feeling.
Yeah, and it's because its proximity to Vault 13, right? So refreshing everyone's memory of the main plot, Vault 13 is somewhere down here, and we know that, right, outside of the game, because NCR, the New California Republic, springs up from Shady Sands from the first game, which is the first town you go to.
Mm-hmm.
It springs up from their kind of political organizing efforts after the Vault Dweller got rid of the raiders who were attacking them. Mm-hmm. So,
and
since they're not having to defend themselves, those serfs can,
yes,
or peasants, whatever they were, they can self-organize and then create democracy in the wasteland.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Shady Sands, and therefore the NCR, was founded by people who left Vault 15, which was the first vault that you went to in Fallout 1 in order to look for another water chip, and you found it abandoned.
Exactly. So we know that we're there close to the goal of this game, or at least our stated goal, right? Find Vault 13, find a GEC that might theoretically be in that vault. So we know that those things are, like, important to do. In a weird way, you get here and it's like, oh, we just got one more step before we, like, do the thing. And so all of the external quests feel they're either leading directly to Vault 13, or they're just like almost inconsequential feelings. So did you do the quest, I mean, I'm putting this in big quotation marks, with Dorothy and Toto?
Yes, I did. What a weird thing.
Do you want to talk about that?
So I don't remember actually who told me about Dorothy and Toto. I think it might have been Mira, who is the bartender.
Yeah, I think she does.
Yeah, she mentions, like, there's a city engineer named Dorothy, and she may want your help. So I met Dorothy, did not even realize it was Dorothy, because she's a woman who is standing with her robot outside. Well, I want to back up, actually. When you enter NCR itself, we've mentioned that there's like a laser gate that comes up at night, but it just it's not like Vault City where you have to have papers to get in, right? It goes down in the morning. So you enter Vault City, or not Vault City, geez. You enter the NCR, and you see two things. Lots of cops and lots of, like, flags, American flags. These are, there is, like, a cop literally, like, on the corner of every block. When I say a cop, right, I mean almost like a storybook picture of a policeman, of, like, just a dude in a blue suit with a blue cap. They're everywhere. Again, I am not clear to the extent to which this is like the fabled satire of Fallout, because there's not really a lot of commentary made about it. They're just there. But as you're wandering around, you'll see a woman standing outside of a building with her pet robot. This is Dorothy and Toto, and she is screaming about how she needs help because someone is threatening to blow up the power plant, this guy named Jack. Will you help me? And you can be like, yes. So a couple of things, right? She's standing outside yelling for help, and none of these cops are doing anything.
No.
You teleport inside, and it turns out that the guy who is threatening to blow up the power plant is also a cop.
Interesting.
Yes. His name is Jack, and you can... Basically, he is getting ready to, like, overload the power plant for the city and just blow it up because he is, he has recently broken up with his girlfriend, who is Mira, the bartender from outside, I guess. It's this very stereotypical rehearsal of kind of middle class, like, male rage, right? Like, she left and she took everything and I have nothing left, and so on and so forth. And if you are canny about this, if you have, I guess, a good speech skill, as Twelinor does, you can sort of do this thing where by turns you empathize with him, where he's like, you don't understand. And you can be the hostage negotiator and say, well, like, you're right, I don't understand. Why don't you tell me? And then, you know, sort of empathize with him and his feelings, but also push back on his desire to destroy everything. And then essentially what Twelinor did is convinced him that if he blew up the power plant, then actually Mira had won.
The worst.
Yep.
It's impossible.
Right. And so he decided not to blow up the power plant and then disappeared. It turned out I found him later. He just like teleported himself to jail.
Well, that's the right thing to do. I mean, I get it. I did not. That is not the experience I had of this. Like, not even a little bit.
So. Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't. That's the only. You didn't like reload or anything. That's the only thing that happened.
Yeah. No, that was. Well, actually, no. The first time. So I ended up like screwing a bunch of other stuff up, and I hadn't saved. Like, I accidentally aggroed the entire town. Oh!
I've also did that at one point.
Okay.
This, so.
So, in the final playthrough, I managed to, like, get through to him. In my first playthrough, where I wasn't saving sort of diligently, I ended up ending that because everyone in town aggroed me, because this is another place where if you don't put away all your weapons, then that is taken as a threat.
Yes, and if anyone in your party has a weapon out, that's a threat. Yes, 100%.
Yes, so I had a moment where like, I think, like, friggin' Marcus or something, like, pulled out his weapon, which, by the way, this is very weird. Marcus, who joined my party last episode, upon joining my party, his default weapon was a flare.
Cool.
So, he is holding a flare. He I guess, has it out too long, and that makes the police aggro me. And so Marcus whips around and throws a flare, unlit, at a policeman's head. and by that token, right, everyone in the NCR now hates me and I have to reload. But before that, what happened was I did not negotiate my conversation with Jack very well, and I had to shoot him before he blew up the power plant. And then when I did, Dorothy was very shell-shocked and was like, oh, you killed him. Was there any other way? And you could respond, no. Or yes.
I was just like, no, there wasn't. Yeah, so that's what my successful, quote unquote, like, way of navigating this conversation, my second time through it, because I had to do it two times. The second time through was I walked in and just stabbed him immediately, like, without any kind of talk or conversation, just stabbed him, and he went down. And she was like, was there any other way to do it? And I was like, no, there was not. I'm sorry. Because the first time I did it, I didn't understand what was happening. So, because it teleports you into the room, and I was like, oh, this is like a cutscene where I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just watched as he stood there and, like, dialogue scrolled over his head, and I'm just diligently reading his little barks, and then he blows up. And so then Dorothy was like, oh no, he is destabilized, because he's got, like, a plastic explosive, and that's how he's, you know, destabilizing the thing. And so she's like, oh no, he's destabilized the power supply. If we don't repair it, it'll blow up. This whole thing will blow. And then she says, well, are you good at fixing things? Do you think you can do it? And my only dialogue option was just, no. No, I'm not. I know, that's not me.
It's like, aren't you the city engineer? Is this not, like, your job?
You would think. And so then she says, okay, fine, I'll do it. So she ran over there and she starts, like, typing on the computer. It's a little, you know, like, working animation.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe 10 seconds into that, she just exploded, like, exploded into nothing. And explosions kept happening. And, like, hit me and I think killed one of my party members, which is why I reloaded. But yeah, like, it goes all the way. So, like, in some ways, NCR, yeah, I agree, is, like, not particularly interesting in ways that, especially after New Reno, right? But, like, the fail states on this one, pretty good. I think there a lot of, like, time was put into that. I think there was a lot of, like I was saying earlier, there was a lot of, like, thinking about point A, how do you get from point A to D?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, putting a lot of thought into the mechanism that kind of shunts you from piece to piece, but without kind of a holistic thought of, like, what is the motivation or what is the kind of shepherding mechanism that gets us interested in A that makes us want to get to D, right? And that's, like, the piece that doesn't necessarily come through in NCR.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't actually do that many quests here. So you didn't talk to Salt Beef Bob, so let's talk about that closer to the end, because I think we got to the same place at the end of the day. But that means you didn't do anything for the Weston Ranch at all. So what did you do here?
Here's an interesting thing. It's like, I'm supposed to go see Weston, right? That's one of the things that, that's a thing that Bishop strong-armed me into doing in the last episode. I can't get to Weston's ranch. I go down there and there's just, like, a guard and a laser gate and nothing I say will let me through. So I kept expecting it to unlock at a certain point, and it just didn't. So instead, I wandered around the NCR. I went to the Hubology Church. Did you do that?
So I got the quest for it, and I was like, I don't know what a Hubologist is, so I'm not murdering anybody.
I just wandered in and talked to them, and the Hubologist is this, it's like a little church, and there's a person in a robe, and you can talk to them, and Hubology is a cult, and it is a clear and direct parody of Scientology. Like they offer to, like, do a reading of you to figure out, like, how much negative psychic energy you have. And they say that, you know, everyone is, like, haunted by the negative psychic energy of all of the people who died in the nuclear war. And so the hubologists are dedicated to, you know, this training program that purges all of this negative psychic energy from you. I just like responded sassily until he or she, I'm not sure what it like, it's just, you know, a robed figure, right? Until the priest of hubology got angry at me and wouldn't talk to me anymore. And likewise, I didn't kill anyone here because no one told me to kill the hubologist. I was just like, well, that's interesting. That's a thing that exists. Then I went to the only place that I could. There's a couple of like doctors here. There's like a person who's a doctor who is in a building that is next to another building that's labeled as a hospital that I guess has another doctor in it. I don't understand what's going on here. But it seemed like there was some sort of quest that I wasn't activating. And then I...
One is a doctor of philosophy and the other is a medical
doctor. Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So you
but they both wear the lab coat, okay, which is very confusing.
So then I ended up just going to, what do they call it? It's like the Congressional House or something?
Yeah. So you walked past the big statue?
Yes, I did.
That statue is cool.
Yes. So you...
I think I wrote down what it says. I didn't. It has a... did you write down what it says on the statue?
I did not write it down. I can try looking it up really quick. But
I can look it up if you want to, like, summarize.
Okay. The next screen after... This is a couple of screens. The first screen we've kind of just walked through. The second screen is where sort of the government building is. And you walk in and it's a square or a plaza. And there's this massive statue in the center between these two government buildings. And the statue is of the Vault Dweller, although they don't call it the Vault Dweller. They call him the Stranger.
The Stranger, yeah.
Yeah. And it's this, it's this big statue that is dedicated to the Vault Dweller because the sort of history, the mytho-history of the NCR at this point is that had not the Vault Dweller / the Stranger shown up and, destroyed the Khans back in... So the Khans were the gang that kidnapped... The Raider gang that kidnapped Tandy back in the first game. Had that not happened, then the NCR would not exist. So everything, like the NCR owes itself to the Stranger. Did you find that inscription?
Yes, I did. So it says, if you click on the statue, you get this. The statue has a plaque, and it reads, "To the Stranger and Vault 13, what doesn't exist, we must sometimes dream and let our dreams inspire us to greater heights. So it was with the Stranger and his belief in the legend of Vault 13. So the NCR, there are people in living memory, right? He exists, that Tandy's still around. There are people who are alive who remember the Vault Dweller showing up. The Vault Dweller had, I want to remind you, a suit on with a big-ass 13 on it, right? But they don't believe that Vault 13 existed.
Yes.
They think the Stranger, the Vault Dweller, just made it up. And he was just like some zany guy who was really good at murdering raiders, but not at knowing where he came from.
It's very weird. And like, I got a line from Tandy about this when I ended up talking with her. Like, I could ask her about the Vault Dweller or whatever. And she like sort of like laughs and is like, "Ah, oh, that kooky guy who believed in Vault 13. What?
You're like, it's right there.
Right, like... It's a weird, not necessarily callback to this problem in the first game that I noted, which is that Killian Darkwater of Junktown also did not believe you. This is what's weird is that Killian Darkwater in that game, he's the mayor, sheriff, whatever, of Junktown, which is the town you go to after Shady Sands. He did not believe in the vault. No one in Shady Sands at the time seemed... like skeptical of the idea that you came from a vault or that a vault existed. It was just Killian Darkwater who was like talking about how vaults were fairy tales or something. But apparently, and Shady Sands, right? Those people came from a vault. Like they came from Vault 15.
Yeah, it's right there. It's like a day's walk away. So yeah, consistently. And I guess I understand how we got to this point, right, narratively, because you kind of like the daisy chain of logic has to break somewhere, and like they chose to like basically hang a lampshade on it, right,
mm-hmm.
by putting the statue in, because if Vault 13 is real and they know where the Vault Dweller came from, even in a rough kind of way, NCR is pretty big. There's a lot of people that live here. It's got a lot of political power, mm-hmm. right? It's
population like a regional of 3,000.
Oh, 3,000. I didn't even realize that. Yeah. But big, right? If they believe that Vault 13 is real, they would have found it, and they would have looted it, and the Gek won't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that like presents, I think, a narrative problem for this game.
Mm-hmm.
So the easiest way of solving it, and I can see how this happened, right, is being like, they just don't think it's real, and they didn't care to look for it.
Yeah.
I don't find that compelling as an answer, but like it is an answer. So that's where we are. But I thought that was cool that there's this kind of like already what you see here are two competing mythologies of the Vault Dweller, right? Mm-hmm. Yours as a child or a grandchild of the Vault Dweller, and Tandy, and then the NCR in a general sense, their relationship to it. And you know, I beat the last time I beat New Vegas was like the week it came out. And I don't remember if NCR in that game has like any kind of reference to its origination or Tandy or any of this stuff. So it's gonna be really interesting for me when I get there to see like, oh, does this legacy or this legend as it plays out in the Fallout-iverse, does that continue or not? Because I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I got like you get that from that statue, which is interesting, and then you get you go into the congressional building, and you can ask to speak to President Tandy through her personal assistant Gunther.
Oh no! Before that, you have to convince like the security guard that you need to be able to speak to Tandy, and then you got to convince Gunther, and then you got to talk to Tandy. So there's like even more like weird steps in the middle.
Oh, okay. I guess like so much of Twelinor's like existence in the world is just like talking to people and fairly effortlessly like telling them what she needs, and them just being like, "Well, you have a high speech skill." Like, I agree. that it almost doesn't occur to me, but yes. I guess, yeah, you have to, anyway, like, yes, you have to have conversations in order to have conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And then how did Tandy treat Tungsten?
No, first thing I want to note, she looks a lot like the village elder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like a weird kind of reskin thing going on there, which I thought was weird. Basically, she's like, hey, we got some issues out at Vault 15. They need something from Vault 15. I don't remember what they need.
Computer parts.
Okay. Just classic computer parts scenario. Yep. Oh, I guess kind of two cool things I learned from them. Number one, I got confirmation that they are actually using New Reno as a way of doing violence to Vault City in order to convince Vault City to join up. Like, Tandy straight up confirmed that to me and didn't mm-hmm. even pretend like it was a secret. So that was interesting. But number two is that, yeah, they need stuff from Vault 15. And the problem is that there are people who have set up, and she calls them squatters, and they have named their like location the squat. And they've set up on top of Vault 15, and they won't let anyone down in there. And they need stuff. So can I go solve that problem? I did not end up solving that problem. I, in fact, never went to Vault 15.
Oh.
What I just told you, those two pieces of info, are the only things that Tandy and I talked about. I went the other direction, the Western Ranch direction, and that took me through the majority of the rest of the plot here. So, in fact, I don't think there's anything else, like, in NCR proper
mm-hmm.
that I did here.
Oh.
That was not Western Ranch related. So, but I think you did some different stuff. Well, so
I did Vault 15, right? I did solve this problem. So,
well, tell me about it.
Yeah. So, how this works out is Tandy needs computer parts. So she marks Vault 15 on your map and explains this whole situation with the squat. And you go to Vault 15, and it's weirdly not like Vault 15 in the previous game. Like, there's this cliff face there that is just, like, was not there. I don't, like, I'm not saying that, like, this broke my immersion or anything. It's just very strange to have so much that is clearly reused from the previous game and then building an entirely new little, like, map for this area that we have been to and, like, putting in a massive geological formation that simply wasn't there. But it's a little shanty town, as you might expect. And everyone here is, like, no one will really talk to you, right? Everyone seems kind of suspicious or, like, worried about something else. But there's a woman named Rebecca who is standing out and kind of, like, she will talk to you, right? She will ask you, she's like, do you have a moment to talk? Like, I need to tell you, or, like, I need help. We need to talk in private. And you go into her tent, and she explains basically what is going on here in the squat. So the squat, as a community, is led by a guy named Darian, or Darren. I've heard that actually pronounced both ways. But he is part of a group that is, like, renovating the vault. The idea is that Vault 15, as I've already mentioned, was abandoned by the initial vault dwellers who ended up founding Shady Sands. And the reason it was abandoned was because there was, like, a cave-in. So Darian is he and his, like, posse or whatever are restoring the vault, but won't let anyone living topside down in yet. They say that they have the water and the food systems back online. And there's also, like, this in and of itself is kind of a change, because there was a person who was in charge named Zeke, who is still around, but Darian kind of stepped in and was like, hey, what we need to do is, like, move back into this vault and start living there, and it's, like, a place where we can, you know, defend ourselves and be fortified and so on and so forth. So that is a thing that is happening right now. But also Rebecca's big problem is that her daughter Chrissy is missing. Someone took her. Like, Chrissy went off one day and, like, hasn't come back. As you have this conversation, Rebecca realizes someone has been listening. Someone's been outside the tent listening. And so she tells you, oh gosh, like, someone overheard us. Someone knows that I have suspicions. They went to the Northwest.
So someone's being a little Samwise Gamgee out there is what you're telling me.
Yes, yes. Well, if Samwise were not very good, let's say, because it turns out that if you go to the northwest of the little squat, there's a woman who is guarding this. Her name is, like, Dahlia, I think. And she says, you know, you can't pass, right? You can't go past here. And if you try to go past, she'll aggro you. But
being a Gandalf, you might say.
Yeah, yeah. And if you talk with her, well, like, what Twelinor did was, like, you know, did you see anyone suspicious running this way to the northwest? And Dahlia's like, I don't know. All I know is I'm not allowed to let you pass. And then Twelinor was like, well, there's a woman here who's looking for her daughter, and, like, I'm trying to help her. And I guess that convinces this woman who's been hired as a guard. And she's like, yeah, sure. Okay, pass me. So I walk past her into this second screen where there is another little, like, shack. And there are raiders in here.
Hey everybody, this is Cameron in the edit. Just here with a content warning. Over the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about a quest that kind of deals with sexual assault. It's there's some real confusing stuff going on. I'm not being cagey. It's legitimately very confusing. So if you don't want to deal with any of that, that's perfectly fine. Just skip about 10 minutes ahead.
Like straight up people who will fight you. And you can talk to them at first a little bit, trying to figure out, like, I'm looking for Chrissy, and one of the people that you talk to. And here is another place where we might want to insert a content warning, but it's a very confused content warning. When you ask this raider guy about Chrissy, he's like, oh, you mean that girl that we've been having fun with? Yes. Which, you know, very strongly suggests that they have her. And I want to be clear also, it's not obvious how old Chrissy is, right? Rebecca talks about her as if she's pretty young. This is all very sort of, you know, questionable in terms of just in its writing and being in this game. But as you might suspect, like, once you kill these raiders, you can find Chrissy in a back room. Now, when you talk to her, she mentions that she starts saying things about how, like, they keep sending guys in and she keeps fighting them off. Right. So there's a weird way in which this threat of her being, like, repeatedly sexually assaulted by these raiders, it's like brought up, but then also, like, suddenly it's like, oh, actually, but it never really happened. It's very, very bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah, it almost feels like they did a rewrite on one chunk of the dialogue, but not another chunk of the dialogue. So it is like a mismatch here.
Yeah. But anyway, she mentions that she has been kidnapped. Like, she's been secreted away, not just for, like, other nefarious purposes, but because she found out that the raiders are living in the vault, that Darian, this dude, is not, in fact, a really good guy. He is the leader of the New Cons, which were the raiders that were terrorizing Shady Sands before. They were the ones who kidnapped Tandy. So we have a new...
First is tragedy, then is forest, you say.
Yes. So now we have the New Cons. And what they are doing is they are basically just, like, camping out in the vault itself, not really fixing it up. All of the water and food that they've been bringing to the squat and saying that they've, like, repaired those systems within the vault, are just, it's just stuff that they've been stealing from caravans that they've been raiding. So Chrissy found this out, and I think either from her or somewhere in this area, maybe from one of the raiders you kill, you get a key card that allows you, so you get this key card, and, or maybe you get it from Zeke. I did not write this down, who gives you this key card or how you get it, but then you go talk to Zeke, who is kind of the, you know, previous or, like, still current head of the squat before Darian showed up with this scheme. And I think it actually might be Zeke who gives you the key card. He says, well, you know, like, you tell him everything that's happened, everything that Chrissy has told you. And he's like, well, that's not good. But I unfortunately can't do anything about it because we're, like, I'm just the leader of a bunch of people who live in tents. And we're kind of at the mercy of these folks who we've sort of thrown our cause in with. So anyway, he explains that you... the player could get down into the vault and maybe do something about Darian. And you acquire, through some means, another key card that allows you to take a kind of back door down into the vault. So back in the other screen where you found the shack where Chrissy is being held, you can see a door in the cliff face, and you can use your key card on that to open that secret door, and it gives you access to the elevator, and you go down, and surprise, it's a vault, and it's filled with raiders. There is very little that is interesting here in terms of conversation. The funniest thing is that the raiders are really bad at seeing you. So I know that Twelinor is kind of a stealth character, and I think actually it was after this, but I got a perk that means I can run silently now. So, like, I'm just zipping everywhere. But I just basically, like, ran through the vault without fighting or talking to anyone. Until I got to the third level when I found Darian and I confronted him, and then you have to fight him and destroy him, and then everyone else aggroes you. And then I died, like, a couple of times, like, trying to work my way back up to the surface, but eventually I did it. And one of the other things that I accomplished here, in the vault there are a bunch of working computers, and so you can... You can get information from them, and I got two pieces of critical information. One is that the NCR has a spy in it working for the cons, and then the second piece of information was the location of Vault 13.
Did you follow up on the spy thing?
Yes, I did. I was just pausing there for a breath.
There's a huge amount of just to say really briefly, there's a huge amount of stuff here that I just did not do. I did not realize how extensive that this would be its own, like, complete Quest universe.
Well, I mean, it's its own complete thing, but it's also it feels very much like a version, like in the same way that you did kind of the Westin stuff, I guess. Maybe, and we'll see what happens when you describe that, but this feels like an alternative to that. So I go back, I explain to Zeke what has happened, right? Everyone is free, everyone is happy. And because I have sort of brokered, like, because I have helped out Vault 15, they are now, like the squad is perfectly happy with the idea of coming under NCR's protection. Because this is the other thing, right? Like, if NCR came from Vault 15, like, why wasn't it, you know, sort of incorporated from the get-go? And it's because there has been this sort of faction led by Darian saying, like, no, we're just going to, like, squat on top of this place. So I go back to NCR. I inform Tandy that she has a spy. She's like, oh, goodness, that's bad. Tell Gunther. So I tell Gunther, and then, like, the spy is arrested, and that's the end of that.
Great. Easy.
Yes, right? There's very little that follows through on that.
Policing is uncomplicated in this world. Like, in general, right? It's either, like, at the end of a gun or just people go to jail.
Right. They teleport themselves to jail in the best instances.
in Soviet Russia, of course. Criminals teleport themselves to jail.
That actually reminds me, there was a missing step here. So Tandy, when she gives you this quest, says, you know, we have someone from the squat in the jail here, but they're not being cooperative. And you can go and talk to them. And I don't remember what the guy's name is, but he's just a guy, like, you can tell the cops, like, I'm here to question this prisoner. They will let you go to the cell. They will unlock the cell for you. And the prisoner just, like, will insult you, will not tell you anything. And then you have the opportunity, like, you can just, like, hit them, right? Just, like, punch this dude. And then once you've punched him or, like, shot him once, then he'll tell you, like, oh gosh, like, you know, I was sent by Darren or whatever. Anyway, you explain to Tandy that there's a spy, she gets rid of the spy. And then you tell her, like, Vault 15 wants to be incorporated now. And she's like, that's excellent. Like, we'll send some representatives over and we'll start going through, like, the citizenship training or what have you. And, thanks a bunch. And she gives you, like, $4,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. Quite a bit of money.
Oh, yeah. I didn't get that. I didn't get a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm just, looting flamethrowers out of the wasteland, and that's where my money comes from. So,
Well, yeah, so that's, like, after this, that's when I went to Vault 13, because I was essentially done with everything in NCR.
Gotcha. The Western Ranch is a little less involved than that, but not by much. The way that you get to the Western Ranch is you talk to the sheriff, who's just, like, looks like a police officer. Nothing to distinguish him.
That's why I could never figure out how to get into the Westin Ranch, because someone told me, it's like, oh, you should talk to Sheriff whatever, but there's just all these cops, and I have no idea which one is the sheriff.
There's just dudes. I just found him because I was just literally hovering over everyone to get their description, and it's like, he has gray hair. It's like you see a uniformed officer with gray hair, and I was like, oh, he might be a person, and so I talked to him. So you can say, hey, is there any, he's got some, like, silly dialogue that he has with you. He's just real kind of, you know, side eye about your whole deal, you know, wandering the wasteland and whatnot. And so but you can talk to him, and he says, or you can ask him about honest work. And he says, well, if you're really looking for honest work, you can go, like, try to be a ranch hand over at the Western Ranch. And so I walked over to the Western Ranch, talked to that guard, and I was like, hey, I heard there's honest work over here. The sheriff sent me, and he'll let you in. I'd heard about, not Saltpeter Bob, but something like that.
Salt Beef Bob.
Yeah, Salt Beef Bob. I'd heard about him from a couple different people, because Salt Beef Bob is, he's a drunk, and he has been telling people for years that he, quote unquote, found the mother load, right? He found Vault 13. But now he just hangs out at Weston's ranch. So I went over to the Western Ranch, talked to Weston himself, and I was like, hey, Bishop sent me to kill you. And he was like, you should go back and kill Bishop. And I was like, well, okay. So I left dialogue and started dialogue again. And I was like, hey, guess what? I killed Bishop. And so he so I got credit for that quest. And so he basically was just like, yeah, I asked him what he knew about Vault 13. And he said, well, I'll tell you what I know about Vault 13 if you go do something for me. And I hadn't found Salt Beef Bob at that point. He's in the ranch. It's just kind of one screen with three buildings in it. But I hadn't found him yet. And I was like, oh, maybe that's just an easier way to do it. I'm already in this conversation. I'll do that. So he teleports me outside of town. Something's rustling their cattle, right? Something's stealing their Brahmin. You go out, and what happens, it's a weird kind of scripted event. Because you can't interact with anything, but like time is switching. So it'll be like daytime, nighttime, daytime, nighttime, daytime, nighttime. And during one of these flips over, some Deathclaws show up, and they can talk. And they're like, uh-oh, there's a person over there. We're not supposed to be seen by people. Bye-bye. And then they like run away. And that's it. That's the whole thing you can do. You know, you can't even like go into combat to like, you know, try to attack them or something. So I go back to Weston. I'm like, hey, man, it seems like based on, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but basically if you just post someone out there, I've heard that whoever's wrestling your cattle, they won't do anything as long as there's a human out there. So just like post a dude out there and you'll be fine. And he's like, are you sure? I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's going to be very diplomatic and like not specifically telling him possibly the most alarming element of this story.
Yeah, there was no, as far as I know, there was no option to be like, hey, there's Deathclaws out there. I don't remember there being one. And so I did that, and he was like, all right, I'll do that. Thanks. I think that you can learn something about Vault 13 if you go to Vault 15. I was like, oh, great. Because I'd already talked to Tandy, I'd already gotten that quest, and I just wasn't pursuing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I found Salt Beef Bob. Salt Beef Bob says, hey there, you got anything to drink? Give him some alcohol. He says, he starts telling me about this like this wild story, right? And he says, at one point I was like out in the wilds and I had like, I had a robot buddy. I had like a Mr. Handy with me and he was my best robot buddy. And we were like wandering the wastes and doing things. And one time we got beset by like 10 Deathclaws and they were attacking me so he tells this long fight story about his Mr. Handy, like, burning out his last circuit board, to protect Bob. And Bob, like, he runs out of ammunition, and he's, like, using rocks to hold off these Deathclaws. And he falls in a cave, and he, like, drags himself, you know, to cover. And he finds a vault, and it's Vault 13, right? So he saves his energy in that cave, and then he makes his way back across the wasteland, you know, and comes to the NCR, and he draws a map. And the doctor, and this is what you were talking about earlier, feeling like there was a quest maybe that you weren't getting access to.
Mm.
There was a doctor who stole his map when he got back.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I went to the doctor, and I said, hey, Salt Beef Bob, that's all Salt Beef Bob's got for you. So he doesn't remember how to get there, but he did draw a map. But, you know, due to the stress of the injury and the years and the alcohol, they can't remember exactly how to get there. So I go to the doctor and I was like, hey, I've heard that you've got Salt Beef Bob's map. What gives? And he says, I don't at all. The only thing I have of Salt Beef Bob's is this Velvet Elvis painting.
Okay.
And I was like, well, can I check out that painting? He says, well, you know, I was hoping I'd get a little money for it. It's literally what he says. That's the phrase. I was hoping I'd get a little money for it. Like it's, Antiques Roadshow.
Right.
And he says, well, you can give me, what about 10,000 monies? $10,000. And I said, okay, sure, whatever. So I pay him $10,000. I inspect this Velvet Elvis painting. It is indeed a Velvet Elvis painting. On the back is a map to Vault 13. I go stand behind the doctor. I use my, 22% steel skill. I pickpocket my $10,000 back off of him. And then I'm on my merry way to Vault 13. So I, didn't do any of that other stuff that you were talking about. I go to Vault 13. It's Vault 13 as you imagine it. I go and open the door. I walk into the door, and what would you believe would be in there but a bunch of talking Deathclaws?
I really like this.
I also really like this, but it's weird in our like cultural valorization of Fallout, especially Fallout 2, that we don't talk about a major fulcrum of the plot being a bunch of talking death claws. That just doesn't show up in the conversation.
No, this like totally falls out of what sort of gets remembered about these games, right? I don't know. I haven't played Fallout 4 extensively, but like I don't think talking death claws come up again. Yeah, so it's on the one hand, right, I love this concept. I love this conceit. On the other hand, I also feel like it's just woefully underwritten. Mm-hmm. Because after the fact that you realize they're talking death claws, that's about as much as there is to them.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, that's interesting. And so, yeah, I mean, I imagine we had a very similar conversation here where you kind of learn that they don't want to do harm to anyone, but they do... they get all their supplies from the vault itself, and their mechanism that they use in order to do that, because the keyboard is broken, they use a voice control module, and the voice control module is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Is that same idea as what happened for you?
Yeah, basically. I did get a little more sort of like historical background on them, like where they came from. Did you get any of that?
No, I don't think that was available to me, actually.
Yeah, so the leader of the Deathclaws, the Alpha, is a Deathclaw named Gruthar. And he is sort of, he's very peaceful and, like, dedicated to, you know, having a nice little community here. And he lets humans live with him, or, like, live with them in the vaults. And you can ask Gruthar, you know, kind of like what is up. And he explains that these death claws are the result of genetic manipulation carried out by the Enclave. The Enclave wanted to build an army of death claws, but they needed death claws that were more intelligent than like the normal run of death claws. So they could be like intelligent enough to like, I guess, be trained or receive orders or whatever. And then the problem is they made death claws that were too intelligent, and these death claws went rogue, escaped the Enclave, and then camped out here in Vault 13. Now, you might wonder, where are all of the people who were in Vault 13? Because the vault is in, like, more or less pristine condition. It turns out the Enclave took them. So I think what we're supposed to understand here is, you know, that the opening FMV where you see the vault open and then you see like the Enclave soldier looking on, is that is Vault 13 opening and the Enclave like rushing in and kidnapping everyone.
Oh no.
Yeah.
My ancestors.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what you learn, sort of about that. And then you can, I mean, and that's sort of the end of it, right? You can then go to the other levels of the vault and look at, like, you can meet some people here, like people who the Death Claws have, like, most of them, right? With the exception of one human that you find here, they're people that the Death Claws have saved. There's like a woman who she and her husband and her daughter were attacked by raiders, I think. And then the Death Claws saved the husband was killed, but the Death Claws saved the others. And her daughter is still there, and her daughter is walking around pretending to be a cat. She's just like the little bark over her head is just meow, meow, meow. And then when you talk to her, because this is Fallout, you can threaten to beat her up because she's pretending to be a cat, and that makes you angry.
Of course you can. The I really love talking to the woman because the game, there's some good writing here, because the game is constantly giving you the opportunity to be like, and then the Death Claws kidnapped you, right? And then something bad happened, right? And every time she's like, no, I want to be here, and I'm happy to live with the Death Claws, and yeah, they provide for us, and I'm having a great life. It's much better than the Wasteland.
Yeah.
I think that's very fun.
Yeah, no, and there's like one guy who his name is like Matthew or something, who is like, he's like, I'm being kept prisoner, by which he means like he's allowed to sort of wander around, but the Death Claws don't let him leave because they think he's dangerous. And it turns out he is dangerous because he tried to set off a bomb to kill all the Death Claws. Did you learn this?
No, I did not talk to this guy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So there's a, on the third level of the vault, there's a little like doorway being guarded by another Death Claw. And you can ask very nicely if you can go through the doorway because he says like the mother is there, right? Like the mother Death Claw. And you can just ask very nicely if you can go through and he will let you, and you can go talk to the mother. Who is, again, right, peaceful and nice, and she explains that, yeah, like, we have to have a guard stationed out there because there was this guy, Matt, who we let in, and then he started talking about how the Death Claws were going to eradicate humanity, and he tried to blow me up.
Good God. Well, so I'm assuming then that he is the person who sabotaged the voice chip.
I guess, presumably. I didn't get hard confirmation for that, but yeah, you do find out, so you mentioned, yeah, that the computer system that Gruthar is using, the voice chip is no longer working because the keyboard has been disabled. There's a guy whose name I don't remember, who's like their technician, hanging out by the computer in the overseer's office. Did you talk to him?
I did talk to him, but we did not have much to talk about. Despite, again, my science skill being like 110%, no one will talk to me about science.
Well, this is interesting. So you can talk to him, and he explains, like, you know, I can't fix this. Also, let's be clear, the overseer's room does not look like how the overseer's room used to look, right? There's this massive...
like a big computer thing.
Yeah, there's this massive, like... computer mainframe that kind of looks like an old style like steam locomotive or something, right? Like an Art Deco train engine. You can talk to the technician whose name I don't remember, and he explains that it seems that at some point in the vault's past there was an uprising, a rebellion, and the people of Vault 13 essentially eliminated the position of overseer. And in order to do that, they replaced like the overseer's command post with a computer mainframe that automated all of the vault's functioning. And they got help to do this from the Brotherhood of Steel. Like there's like Brotherhood of Steel markings or something on the computer mainframe.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, also, there's a Brotherhood of Steel place back in NCR. Did you see that?
No, where?
Yeah, like up in like the corner of the first map, like very far away from everything and sort of turned away from the street. So you have to walk around the building to get to the door. There's another little Brotherhood of Steel outpost. And when you talk to the soldier hanging out in front of that, he's like, you've come a long way, haven't you, Twelinor? Because, of course, the last time we saw one of these people was in the den back at the beginning of the game, and they acted like they had been keeping tabs on you, and it still seems that they've been keeping tabs on you. Anyway, that's all a little bit of a tangent. What I thought was interesting was this idea that at some point Vault 13 had had this uprising and that had eliminated the overseer position.
Yeah, I think, like, canonically, lore-wise, I think it's after the Vault Dweller gets banished.
Yes.
Because no one can handle it, what the Overseer did, even though, I mean, you know, in the Tonkaverse, what happens is the Overseer was immediately smashed in twain when he did that. So, you know, I guess it all works out. But yeah, so did you know where a voice chip was?
You ask the guy, and he tells you that you might be able to find one in New Reno. So I went back to New Reno, and I can't remember I know we talked about this particular vendor. He's the one who has, like, I think he's, like, the arms dealer or something. Anyway.
Yeah, he's, like, the weapons guy. It's, like, New Reno Arms or something like that.
So I went back to New Reno and bought the voice module.
Yeah, I just remembered because I'd gone through that dialogue with him before when we were in New Reno. And so I was like, oh, yeah, it must be that thing. I thought it was for a car part.
Yeah.
Initially. But when because like the description, I think in the what's missing versus what the description of it, you know, when he's talking about it, it's basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so went back to New Reno, came back, popped that bad boy in there. And then they gave me a GEC.
Yep. Yep. Gruthar gives you a Gek for fixing everything. Oh, I also got a new party member here. Did you meet Goris?
No.
So Gruthar mentioned that if I wanted to learn more about sort of the history of the vault, I think it's Goris who tells you most of the stuff that I told you about, like the enclave or what have you. He mentions mm-hmm. Goris is in the library. So you go to the library of the vault, and there is a Deathclaw hunched over wearing like a robe. And you can talk to him, and he is very friendly. I guess he's like Gruthar's son or something. And you can just ask him, like, hey, do you, like most people in this game who end up following you, you can just be like, hey, do you want to, like, come along with me? And he's like, yeah, sure. So that is how a talking Deathclaw joined my party.
So currently you've got, if my memory serves, you got Twelinor.
Yes.
You got a super mutant Marcus.
Yes.
You got this dude, a Deathclaw.
Yes.
You've got a ghoul.
Yes.
Who else you got?
Myron.
The world's most annoying teenager.
Yes.
Oof. That's a real motley crew.
Yes, it is. It's very... I actually think... In some ways, I feel like having this massive party that is very annoying has... It defines my play experience in a way that I like. It makes it feel very personal, but I also think I'm getting to a point where I am going to just have to like jettison party members because managing them all is so tedious. But Goris is pretty cool because it's there is so much, like, again, right? This is very thinly written. Which is disappointing to me, but like so much care was put into like Goris specifically. So he follows you around, and he's literally like he's a Deathclaw wearing a robe. So he's just like this massive hooded figure, like walking around behind you. In battle, there is, and this is like it's a full 5 second animation. When battle starts, Goris like rears back and throws off his robe. And, like, throws it behind him, and it, like, lands on the ground, and he, like, you know, reveals himself in all his Deathclaw glory. And he's pretty good at just, like, walking up to people and swiping the crap out of them.
You don't say.
Yeah. And then when the battle ends, he, like, pulls, like, he pull, you know, his robe reappears, and he, like, shrugs it on and, like, pulls down his hood. And it's, again, another, like, full 5 seconds of animation at the end of the battle. Which, on the one hand, makes beginning and ending battles kind of annoying, because it just makes beginning and ending battles longer, right? It is longer than it would be if Goris were not in your party. But on the other hand, the fact that this exists, the fact that it was, like, specially modeled and programmed into the game, is delightful to me.
He's got a flair for the dramatic. He's Goris.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, so after that, I began the long... I mean, is there anything else you did here?
No, that was basically it. I wanted to mention that, like, Goris now was accompanying me as I began the hateful, hateful trek all the way back to Arroyo.
But so it's interesting. Yeah, that's what you said to me before we recorded. You know, that was... So I actually thought that the travel back to Arroyo, because we got a Gek, we got to go back home now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good. I liked it, actually.
I did not enjoy playing this game this session, right? And I didn't enjoy it much playing it in New Reno. I've reached the point that I had reached in Fallout 1, where I was just like, I just want this to start ending, right? Like, I am kind of done with it. And so, yeah, what you have to do to make this clear is you have walked into, like, sort of north central California all of the way from Oregon, and now you need to walk back.
Yeah. And we walked in little pieces the whole way, right?
Yes.
We walked in relatively small little chunks because we've gone to a lot of places. But now we got to do the trek all the way back. And yeah, I mean, it did take forever. It took like a full 30 minutes to walk across the map.
It takes a month and a half of in-game time.
Yes. And I like that. Like, for me, like, that like brought all the stuff together. And I've actually figured out I think we've actually talked about it on the show before, but you know, it's kind of like falling out of my head that the geography that you're walking on determines the types of encounters and the frequency of encounters you're going to have.
Oh yes.
And so like micromanaging that from some pieces is actually pretty cool. I don't know. I thought it was a nice contemplative kind of thing of being like, all right, I've got the thing I need. I just have to live to get back to Arroyo. So it took forever, got all the way back there. And I'm like running out of ammo on the way. And I got to like stop off in, you know, the den and hope that I can find shotgun ammo.
Right. So I have to keep stopping places. I actually stopped by Redding and fixed the mine machine. Like I snuck down into the mine and I ran past all those friggin' aliens, which, by the way, speaking of like the type of terrain that you're walking on determining encounters, if you go too far west, you start encountering like little hordes of those Wanamingos.
Oh, God.
Nightmarish. But I got the chip that I needed from that mine machine and I gave it to Marge LaBarge. So then I, you know, kept going forward.
And we got all the way back to Arroyo. And we are greeted immediately by dialogue. Like, you don't even see anything. You just see dialogue.
Yeah. Oh, and we get set on this path because the second you get the Gek and, like, try to leave Vault 13, you get a dream vision from Hakunin, who's like, Chosen One, we're dying.
I'd already gotten the Chosen One, you're dying. because you remember, So, yeah, I think that's, like, just the final one you get before it stops giving them to you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's gated to this, but it's also gated to time. And so, like, I'd gotten that a while back.
Mm-hmm.
of Chosen One, we are all dead. The crops have failed.
Yeah.
The children are dying. And so, yeah, we get back. We're in dialogue with Hakunin, and he is, like, you would not believe this, but 10 minutes before you got here, even though it took you a month and a half to walk here, basically he is describing it in all the same kind of like stereotypical tribal ways that we were talking about, right? When you were trying to write quote unquote primitive peoples, mm-hmm. all that stuff. That
the Dark Souls episode. Showed up.
Yeah, in their, like, birds of fire,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, blah, blah. Basically, the Enclave showed up with laser weapons and kidnapped everyone, and everyone they didn't kidnap, they murdered. That's it.
Yep. Like, there's, like, it's sort of confusing because there's almost no conceivable reason why they would be doing this, but, you know, this is, I guess, now the back, like, leg of this game.
Which is bad. Like, I think this game would be so much better, like so, so, so much better if you could come back, use the Gek, game is over.
Mm-hmm.
And then the little reel at the end, it's like, and the Enclave killed everybody eventually because the Vault Dweller didn't save anyone, right? It didn't stop the Enclave.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. And then that would give you the impetus, right, to be like, oh, dang, I guess I need to figure out what's going on with this Enclave thing in order to, like, get the good ending of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, this is the quest that you're on. The quest that you're on is not go figure out what's going on in, like, the broader social spectrum of the world. There's no call to action for any of that. I mean, this is serving as one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in the classic, you know, whatever, 1990s until now, you know, inciting incident kind of logic, there's none of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the game should just be over.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because here the game is clearly trying to mimic what happened in Fallout 1, which, and if you'll go back and listen to our episode on that, was a thing that I really liked, which is that Fallout 1 starts you out with, you know, like, go get this water chip, and you do all of your stuff trying to get the water chip, and as you're doing this, you get hints that, you know, there's more and more mutants appearing in the wasteland and so on and so forth. You get the water chip, you bring it back to the vault, and they're like, oh, great, that's wonderful. But also, all this stuff that you're reporting about rising numbers of mutants, that sounds really suspicious, and it could be a threat to us. So we would like you to go back out and investigate that. And I think I said in our episodes on that particular juncture, it makes the world feel kind of full because it makes it feel like the place that you are in, like you have a goal here, right? You have a place here, but then that world unfolds in such a way around you that you get a sense of a larger scale or stakes or what have you. And here, it seems like they tried to do a similar thing, but I like the Enclave existing, not like the Enclave existing in and of itself is not like worrisome or like very, it doesn't come with ready-made stakes in the way that all of these mutants showing up is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like there, yeah, like there was like there are all these mutants showing up. Something is causing these mutants. Whereas here, it's like there's this thing called the Enclave. They're up to business, probably no good. But also like this world is filled with people who are up to no good business. So why should I care about the Enclave specifically?
Yeah, and I think that's probably like the, you know, you're pointing at the, you know, everyone sitting around talking about the game and being like, oh shit. like if we like try to have them come in and go back out again, then it's like, well, why are we not worried about New Reno and the fact that they're like bullying the rest of the, mm-hmm. you know, of the northern part of the wasteland here? Why are we not worried about the NCR? So I get it. So, you know, we're in the back third. This kind of inaugurates the final third of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we don't have that much info to go on, weirdly enough, right?
Right.
The only thing that we know is that Hakunin says that they have talked about Navarro.
Mm-hmm. Which is not a place on our map.
No, it's not a place on our map. I don't think anyone's talked to us about it so far. We got to figure out what Navarro is, and then we got to go from there to like do the Enclave plot, basically.
Mm-hmm. So that's that.
Where can people find you on the internet, Michael?
Oh, if you want to read all the crazy things that I say, you can go to twitter.com/warrenisdead.
You got anything to plug?
I do not.
You can go to twitter.com/rangetouch to learn more about what we're doing over there. If you're listening to this on YouTube and you haven't already, please hit that like button. And if you haven't subscribed, hit subscribe. That'd be really great. If you're listening to this on the podcast, you're probably already doing this, but if not, subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/rangetouch. If you haven't already supported us on Patreon, please think about doing that. As little as $1 a month really does help out in a significant and real way. So smash that old button there and do it. That's patreon.com/rangetouch. It's down in the description below. If you support at $3 a month, you can get all kinds of goodies. And at $5 a month, you get even more goodies. They're not physical goodies. I need to be clear. Digital goodies only.
Cameron is not baking and sending out cookies.
No, not doing any of that stuff. So, yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks for the next episode. I guess, I don't know where we're going.
We're going to Navarro.
I guess, but I don't know if that's I don't know. We're going somewhere else in the next episode. We'll figure it out before then.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.